Welcome back. For those of you joining us now, I'm Ethan Elkind, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. We're podcasting our show. You can find out more information at kalw.org, where you can also listen to past shows there on the Your Call page if you click on news. And you can sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up next. And of course, if you have a show idea for us, we'd love to hear from you. You can drop us a line at yourcall@kalw.org. Also, for listeners who are in the Bay Area, if that's you, you can join Your Calls Rose Aguilar for a special live show, Understanding the Caregiving Crisis. Assembly member Matt Haney will be on the panel. So join us on Wednesday, July 9th at San Francisco's main public library. Caregiving organizations will share resources at 5 o'clock. The live show will start at 6, and you can find out more information on the events page at kalw.org, so you don't want to miss that live event. Again, Wednesday, July 9th at San Francisco's main public library. Well, now we're going to turn our attention to the Republican budget signed into law on Friday, July 4th. It includes significant cuts to a number of critical programs, including investments in renewable energy, environmental regulations, and support for frontline communities that are most affected by climate change. This legislation is sweeping in both scope and impact, and by all accounts, experts say it will set back the urgent fight against the climate crisis, and it may shape the future of our planet for generations to come. Now, this show is just the first in a series of programs where we're going to examine the far-reaching consequences of this budget, from weakened environmental protections to funding cuts for renewable energy and climate research. So just to get an overview of this new law and what's really at stake, we are so pleased to be joined by two guests. So first, we have Sammy Roth, climate columnist for the Los Angeles Times. He writes the twice-weekly Boiling Point newsletter and hosts the Boiling Point podcast, both of which focus on clean energy solutions and are really a must-read and must-listen if you are interested in clean energy. So Sammy, good to have you back with us.
Hey, Ethan, always happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And we are also pleased to be joined by Marianne Lavelle. She is an award-winning reporter for the independent investigative Pulitzer Prize-winning nonprofit news organization Inside Climate News. Marianne has covered environment, science, law, and business in Washington, D.C. for more than two decades. Marianne, good to have you back with us as well.
Oh, glad to be here.
So a lot to talk about with this budget. Sammy, I want to start with you. Your most recent column, which was published on July 3rd, just the day before Trump signed the bill into law, you wrote that you are a climate optimist, but it's hard to find reasons for hope right now. And you noted that Biden's Inflation Reduction Act was the most important piece of legislation addressing the climate crisis, but now it is all gone. So Sammy, what major concerns do you have both about the bill and how it is affecting progress in the fight against climate change?
Well, a lot. I guess I probably shouldn't. I don't know that I use the words all gone, but a lot of it is gone. I mean, the Inflation Reduction Act was the biggest piece of climate legislation in U.S. history. And specifically for solar and wind, it expanded and extended hundreds of billions of dollars in tax credits to grow solar and wind, which are the cheapest and most widely deployed forms of climate-friendly energy. And all of that gets undone right now. So tax credits very quickly get phased out. To build a solar or wind farm and qualify for those tax credits, you either need to finish construction by the end of 2027, which is a really, really hard deadline to meet because these things take years and years to permit and finance and build, or you need to start construction by a year from now. So you have a lot of projects that are, you know, in the development process right now that are just going to get torpedoed by this because of the uncertainty. And you have a lot of development that hasn't begun yet that's just not going to happen because this support is not there. Not just solar and wind farms, but also this manufacturing boom that's happening to build solar panels and wind turbines, to build lithium ion batteries, to store renewable power and sort of other support technologies. That all is, going to probably crash in a pretty big way. This bill phases out also quite quickly tax credits for rooftop solar power, for that $7,500 tax credit for electric vehicles that more and more people are taking advantage of, energy efficiency upgrades for your house. Meanwhile, more tax credits for coal, specifically for metallurgical coal, which is a pretty dirty version of coal that we don't even use in the United States. It's mostly shipped overseas for China and other countries to make steel. There's a mandate for more oil and gas leasing on public lands, lower royalty rates for coal that's mined on public lands. It's pretty much just whatever the fossil fuel industry wanted, they got in this bill.
Yeah, amazing return on investment for fossil fuel industry and their support for Republican legislators and President Trump. It really does read like a wish list for the fossil fuel industry, and particularly to take out their competition from clean energy rivals. Now, Marianne, as you wrote, President Joe Biden's team left office expressing confidence that this climate legacy would be secure because so much of the $132 billion in private investment in clean energy manufacturing was happening in Republican districts, red states. But ultimately, that didn't seem to happen. Republican members of Congress who spoke out in favor of clean energy ultimately still voted in favor of the budget. It wasn't that big of a priority for them. What do you make of that dynamic? What do you think is motivating those Republican legislators that do have investments in their district or planned investments coming to their district because of these tax credits that they now just voted to gut?
Yeah, I heard so many times from folks in the Biden White House that, you know, even though the Inflation Reduction Act was passed with only Democratic votes, the impact was bipartisan, and it's going to have bipartisan support. They felt much like the Affordable Care Act, like Obama's Affordable Care Act. The impact of it would be so positive that it would have staying power, and that may have made sense in another era, but not in the Trump era, because these Republican legislators in South Carolina, Georgia, Texas, to them, the most important thing was not going against their president. They feel that's what their voters care about. Mm-hmm. The one strategic thing that Trump did was he put everything into this one bill, his whole agenda. And if any one of those lawmakers and many Republicans, enough to make a difference, came forward and said, you know, we don't want to get rid of these tax incentives for clean energy because the projects are already underway in our states. They came forward and said it, but when the time came to vote, they would not vote against the larger bill because there were things like these tax breaks that are set to expire by the end of this year. They felt that, and Trump literally was threatening them with primary rivals and everything else. I mean, two Republican members actually decided not to run for re-election with the pressure that they were facing. And so it was either, side with clean energy in your state or side with your president. And they chose the latter.
Well, we certainly saw Senator Tom Tillis announce he wasn't running for re-election as a Republican swing vote now. But I'm wondering, Marianne, we've talked about the Biden folks predicting that this would lock in bipartisan support, that so many of these investments are coming to red states. But I read another Biden official comment that, you know, a lot of these were just announcements and there weren't actually jobs at stake quite yet. Do you think another 4 years to give the Inflation Reduction Act a little more time to play out? You know, it's just passed in 2022. It took a long time for the regulations to get finalized on the tax credits. Do you think another few years might have locked in even just a handful more Republican votes to preserve those tax credits?
Oh, I think it certainly would have made, if it made any difference, it would definitely be in a positive direction. We went down to South Carolina, and they're already, you know, they've broken ground on a lot of these projects, electric vehicle, battery manufacturing, the same kind of manufacturing. I mean, President Trump wants to revitalize manufacturing. Well, they're just building those plants right now. and those jobs, they don't really exist mm-hmm. until they begin bringing in the workers and the factories are built. So absolutely, Biden needed more time.
Yeah. Well, we're speaking with Sammy Roth, climate columnist for the Los Angeles Times. And you just heard Marianne Lavelle, award-winning reporter for the independent investigative nonprofit news organization Inside Climate News. And we're talking about the impact of the Republican budget just signed into law on Friday on clean energy and the climate fight in the United States. I want to go ahead and open up the phone lines if you have questions for our guests about what's in the budget bill and how it will affect the climate crisis and clean energy. If you work for a clean energy company and are concerned about what the future now will look like, given that so many of these tax credits were rolled back, the number to call to join the conversation, 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or go ahead and send us your question or comment by email to yourcall@kalw.org. Sammy, I want to turn back to you. Given the Biden folks' predictions that this IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act tax credits would have bipartisan support because of the investment, and now that this climate fight has just lost so much so rapidly, which I think you really summarized well in your column on July 3rd, what do you think should have been done differently, if anything? I mean, what else do you think perhaps the Biden folks might have been able to do to avoid this outcome?
Gosh, well, that's a hard question. What should the Biden folks have done differently? I mean, I think that climate politics are pretty fundamentally broken. I mean, it's really unfortunate that climate has become essentially a culture war issue. And I think that that's much deeper than, you know, what could or couldn't the Biden folks have done. I mean, it's quite miraculous that they got such a big climate bill passed at all. I mean, and so much of it came down to Joe Manchin waffling back and forth at the end. You know, I think an easier question, or maybe a question that I'd prefer to answer, might be going forward, you know, as Democrats and even, you know, anyone who cares about fixing climate change going forward, you know, clearly promising jobs and starting to create jobs, at least to an extent in red districts, didn't work because, you know, so many Americans on the right and even in the center and really anyone outside of, you know, like hardcore people caring about climate bubbles, you know, are just seeing this as, oh, this is another culture war thing. This is another, you know, leftists care about climate, right? You know, hard right people don't, and everyone else, it's something that it doesn't matter to that much. I think that people working on climate should be focusing less on you know, passing policy as quickly as possible, because we do need to pass a lot of policy really quickly, or emissions are going to start getting to really even more dangerous, even scarier and harsher levels. But how to sort of bake climate into culture in a way that just more people get it and more people care about it. Because clearly, it's just, you know, even compared to other stuff that's contentious, like immigration or, you know, the price of eggs, which comes up all the time, or foreign policy, or I don't know, you could name a bunch of different ones, what's going on with Iran. It's just not something that most people care about. And until you get to the point where it's not just, oh, climate change, that's a thing that some people care about that I don't really need to, this is going to keep happening. I think that it just needs to get baked into the culture in a much more serious way, where it's not just an issue for the fringes. I don't think Biden could have done anything about that.
Well, so Sammy, I'm curious to follow up on that then. I mean, what do you think should be done? I mean, this is a tough issue. This is, you know, sort of long range, long distance type impacts. Occasionally we have extreme weather events, but for many people who are living, you know, paycheck to paycheck, or you know, much more concerned about losing healthcare, how do you elevate this issue to become a higher priority issue for voters?
It's a great question. I think, well, a few things. I mean, for those of us in the media, to the extent that the media still has, you know, some power to move hearts and minds, I think we need to talk about it a lot more and talk about it a lot more directly. I think that politicians need to not be afraid to talk about climate change and talk about the impacts that it's having every day and really connect it to the extreme weather. I think that people who are, you know, exist in the storytelling space of all kinds, whether that's people on, you know, YouTube or making podcasts, or who are in entertainment making movies, I think that everybody who's in, you know, communications media of some kind need to, you know, figure out how to make climate change part of the stories they're telling. And I think that for, you know, those of us who work on or think about climate change in our everyday lives, just, I mean, I've written this into my column, so for those of you who have read them, forgive me for repeating myself, but just annoy your friends and family about it constantly. Like, I think, you know, it can be a little bit, you know, even sometimes I find myself shying away from it at the, you know, at the dinner table or when I'm out on a hike with my friends. Like, oh, nobody really wants to hear about this. It's scary. It's depressing. Like, if it doesn't get talked about, if it doesn't get out there into the world, these kind of policy whiplashes are going to keep happening until it's, you know, an issue that voters are ranking, you know, third or fourth on their priority list instead of 15th.
Well, I'm sure I can't imagine it'd be hard for you not to talk about climate change, Sammy, on a hike or other dinner time conversation. But I think it's a really helpful advice for folks who care about this issue to help elevate it. I want to go to the phone lines. We have Greg in Palo Alto calling in. Greg, welcome to Your Calls One Planet series.
Hello. Thank you. You know, I thought about this immediately after the vote and decided that this was a pure example of political cowardice on the part of the Republicans, especially Lisa Murkowski. I think these people really need to be held accountable. They're really making the future at this point a much more undesirable future for all of us. I think, you know, you've hit one of the nails on the head, and that is just how do you get this across the people in the country so that enough people understand what's going to happen. And I think the scientific community has got to do a better job as well as the politicians and the media because we're facing really dire consequences. And people who voted for this need to be held accountable. I don't know. Yes. I guess there's one question I have, Ethan, that's this. Let's just say hypothetically, I think it's really hypothetical, that the Democrats were able to come back, at least take the House in 2026. Is there a possibility of rolling back some of these draconian measures that the Republicans passed?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, Greg. Marianne Lavelle from Inside Climate News. Let me direct that question to you. Is there something that Democrats might be able to do coming up if they are able to take back the House? And I also appreciate, Greg, that you flagged the deal, essentially, that Lisa Murkowski seemed to make in exchange for her pivotal vote. Her state of Alaska, a number of her constituents got very specific tax breaks to buy her vote, essentially a whaling captain's tax credit, if I read that and recall that correctly. Marianne, what are your thoughts about accountability, the Murkowski deals, and what Democrats could do going forward?
Yeah, as far as the Alaska deals, let's not forget the mandated drilling and lease sales of oil with Alaska getting like 70% royalties, which is extraordinary. This was all done. And also to follow up on what your caller said about the cowardice aspect of this, after the House voted for this bill, like 8-14 Republicans sent a letter over to the Senate saying, please stop, please don't get rid of these tax credits that they already voted for. And after the Senate passed the bill, Senator Murkowski said, I hope the House doesn't pass this. I hope the House brings it back to us because it needs more work. They didn't love this bill, but they would not stand in front of kind of the Trump train. And I think that everything Sammy said is so true. This is climate politics is broken. It's a very difficult issue. It always was difficult because of the, you know, the cause and effect is so hard for people to see. The fact that they're driving these gasoline vehicles is somehow connected to these wildfires, disasters, everything, all of the other impacts of climate that are also already visible. It's a difficult issue, but you need really, really strong leadership. And the one thing I always wonder is Biden went into office with this Build Back Better idea that pulled together everything. The infrastructure needs, the jobs and everything, and climate. And he allowed that to get severed into two pieces. So it ended up, there was one bipartisan legislation that pretty much survives now, the infrastructure bill, but all the climate stuff got swept away. And if you took up kind of the Trump strategy, you would have insisted that it all go forward together and just really make sure that you get a real strong, broad support for what is going on, or what kind of investment you're going to make.
Potentially advice for future strategy for trying to get climate legislation passed. So Sammy Roth, LA Times, I wanted to ask about the California impacts. What are going to be the impacts to states like California and the climate fight? You know, I know you have covered rooftop solar debates a lot in this state. What is that going to mean for the rooftop solar industry that they're losing the 30% tax credit? If for folks who want to install solar panels or batteries in your home, you're going to lose that 30% tax credit. Or for the EV push in California, the push for zero emission vehicles, what do you think are going to be the impacts in California and other states trying to move forward on climate?
Well, I mean, for rooftop solar and EVs, I mean, they're definitely going to take a hit from that. Rooftop solar has already been ailing pretty badly in California since Governor Newsom's appointees a couple years ago voted to reduce incentives quite significantly. So it's hard not to think that in California and in other states, there's going to be a pretty big drop off. You know, EV sales have been, I don't know the numbers in other states quite so well, but in California, they've been starting to drop down just a little bit. They got up as high as close to 25% or maybe even 25% a few quarters ago, and they've been edging back down a little, which seems like it's at least partly motivated by people not wanting to buy, or liberals not wanting to buy Teslas anymore. So I have to think that that tax credit going away is going to be a, you know, at least something of a big deal, although we'll see how big a deal. In general, it's, you know, this bill is going to make it harder for California and other states with ambitious climate goals to achieve those goals. California has a legal mandate of 100% clean electricity by 2045. There are other states with even more aggressive mandates, some 2040, you know, net zero emissions by 2045. It's still 2025. So, there's some time there, but, there are interim targets on the way to that that are pretty aggressive in terms of emissions and clean electricity and selling electric vehicles. California has a target of no sales of new entirely gas powered vehicles by 2035. And so, this bill is just, and there are other states that have implemented that target based on California as well. So this is just going to make it harder for everyone to do what they need to do is at a state level. I've already seen, people suggesting that the response to this bill is, you know, states need to step up and sort of pick up the mantle of leadership. And absolutely, but states also depend on these federal policies to be able to implement their goals. And that just gets harder now.
Absolutely. Well, Marianne Lavelle from Inside Climate News, we're almost out of time, but just in terms of the national picture here, what does this mean for the national climate fight? What does some of the reporting that you've done indicate about what's going to happen there? And also the role of the media now going forward. I mean, to this point about climate not being elevated as an issue of importance, just quick thoughts on those two topics.
Yeah, well, I think in the short term, you're probably going to see in the next couple months, any demand for EVs that are out there is going to happen between now and September 30th. You may see a surge of folks buying EVs. And by the same token, you're going to see a lot of the developers, wind and solar, try to get their projects begun in the next year, because that is the grace period they have. So that they can continue to rely on the tax credits they have. They were given a year. That was a compromise reached in the end by the Senate. So I think with that activity beginning, I think it's not only up to states, but maybe some of these corporate players like Walmart that has made a whole lot of, you know, has made 100% clean energy a goal and has purchased a lot of power going forward. I think corporate America is just hasn't done enough to make a push, because I think its voices are heard on Capitol Hill.
Well, a lot more we could discuss. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but I just want to thank you both so much for joining us. Sammy Roth, climate columnist for the Los Angeles Times with the twice weekly Boiling Point newsletter and host of the Boiling Point podcast. Thank you for joining us on Your Calls One Planet series, Sammy.
Thank you, Ethan. Boiling Point's down to 1 week now, the newsletter, by the way. Sorry. Oh,
good to know. And Marianne Lavelle, award-winning reporter for the independent investigative news organization Inside Climate News. Thank you for joining us on Your Calls One Planet series.
Glad to be here.
That is our show. Your Call is produced at KALW in San Francisco. You can listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast on our webpage via KALW.org. Just click on news and you can find it there. Malihei Razazan produced today's show. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Ethan Elkind. It's Your Call.
From New Arrivals, our pocket-sized book tour. Stay tuned, Cross Currents is coming up. First, this news.